Welcome to ID the Future, a podcast about intelligent design and evolution.
Hello, this is Mike Keyes with ID the Future, and today we have with us Jay Richards. Jay is the executive editor of The Stream, which is known as the Thinking Everyman's National Daily. He also is assistant research professor in the School of Business and Economics at the Catholic University of America. And he's authored a number of great books, including a New York Times bestseller, Infiltrated, in 2013. And more on topic for today, he edited a volume called God and Evolution, published in 2010. So today, first of all, welcome to the show, Jay.
Thanks, Mike. Great to be with you.
So I had contacted you with the possibility of talking about this recent essay, a lengthy one, by Michael Gerson in The Atlantic, talking about evangelicals, evolution, and Trump. Now, that might get some people interested.
all the best stuff, all in one title.
Now, of course, many of our listeners are not evangelicals, but they would still be interested in hearing how one prominent evangelical has sort of lectured at his at those who he perceives as allying evangelicalism with some rather unsavory fellows. So for who is this guy Michael Gerson anyway? Why should we care about what he said?
That's always a good question to ask. Gerson is a columnist at the Washington Post. He is, at least so far as I know, still an evangelical Christian. He's written a couple of great books with Pete Wehner from the Ethics and Public Policy Center, who has worked for President Bush. Gerson was involved in the Bush administration. And so he's a sort of, I would, you know, in D.C., he's thought of as a kind of centrist. He's probably really to the left on a lot of political issues compared to the average evangelical Christian. But he has for years spoken as sort of an evangelical speaking to other intellectuals and sort of explaining to them what the officially smart people believe. I mean, this is especially since the election of President Trump, Gerson has taken this tone that evangelicals that supported Donald Trump or, you know, besmirched the name of evangelicalism, and now we need another word, another name to call ourselves. And in this long piece in The Atlantic, he's continuing in this vein, which he's been on for about a year, except for the first time, so far as I know, he actually somehow managed to connect this with evolution.
Okay, let me just read the title. So, the title itself is lengthy. Here it is. The Last Temptation: How Evangelicals, Once Culturally Confident, Became an Anxious Minority Seeking Political Protection from the Least Traditionally Religious President in Living Memory. Now, that should get people's attention.
Yeah, absolutely. And, of course, this is a common argument. In fact, at The Stream, The Stream is a platform for Catholics and evangelicals and conservatives. And we've kind of hosted this debate whether, on the one hand, a conservative evangelical would say, look, we know exactly who we're getting with Donald Trump. We're not surprised by him. You know, any kind of story you tell us about his past life, if we sort of grant, maybe it's true. And so it's not as if people are abandoning that idea, but for those who supported Donald Trump, they said, look, the choice was not between Jesus and Donald Trump. It was between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and their policies. And so we have to look at what policies these two people are going to actually implement. And living in Washington, D.C., I can say the other thing most people don't realize is that depending on who's president, you add about 5,000 people to just federal employees that have one or another worldview or political leanings. And so these are significant things. And, you know, evangelicals that have supported Trump said, look, don't imagine that we're dealing with two kind of neutral parties. We're choosing, which, as my colleague John Zmirak said, between Constantine and Diocletian or Constantine and Caligula. Yeah, you know, and right. Given that, it's perfectly appropriate that Christians being attacked in the public square and public schools and having their religious liberty violated would support a candidate who at least promises to protect them. Gerson thinks this is a bad thing because now evangelicals are thinking of themselves as an interest group. But the truth of the matter is it makes sense that evangelical Christians might feel like they're being attacked by the government and would prefer the candidate that promises to protect them.
Okay. Now let's get into his coverage of Politics and Evolution. I'll quote from the article. He says, evolution is a fact, period. It is objectively true based on overwhelming evidence. By denying this, evangelicals made their entire view of reality suspect. They were insisting, in effect, that the Christian faith requires a flight from reason. What do you think of that?
I think that Garrison knows almost nothing about this debate, and this might as well be a macro on a word processing document. The very phrases he used about evolution as a fact, undeniable. There's the trope about the anti-intellectual evangelical who denies the clear facts from science. These tropes have been around since a non-Christian, Mencken actually made these arguments in the 20s during the infamous Scopes trial, and they're still here. Gerson doesn't do anything to actually engage the evidence to show that he even knows the word evolution means lots of different things. The fact that he could type it tells me he has never actually read anything on this subject other than maybe some pamphlets he got at a journalism seminar on how Christians ought to think about science. He's not certainly completely unaware of, except for maybe the hoary stereotypes, the intelligent design debate, for instance. If he were aware of it, he would at least phrase his sentences so as to avoid the most obvious objections.
Okay. Let me read a little bit further. In fact, the very next paragraph, he writes, "There is no meaningful theological difference between creation by divine intervention and creation by natural selection. Both are consistent with belief in a purposeful universe and with serious interpretation of biblical texts." So what do you think of this no theological difference between creation by divine intervention versus by natural selection?
Yeah. What's odd about this is if he's right, Darwin himself and almost all Darwinists don't even understand their own theory, which is an extraordinary thing to say.
Yeah.
The other thing is that it's just so obviously false. If God is directly creating something or God uses a natural process, a secondary cause, you might be able to way to reconcile those with Christian theology. They're just not the same thing. And 1,000 years of Christian theology at least has made a distinction between God's primary causation, where he acts directly, and secondary causation, where he works through natural processes or the actions of other human beings and things like that. And so just at the very beginning, obviously these aren't the same thing. Whether you can reconcile the process of natural selection with Christian theology, that's a different question. In fact, yeah, I think there's nothing about natural selection itself that contradicts Christian theology or theism in general. The question, of course, is how much does natural selection actually explain? Is it basically a pruning force or is it a creative force? That's an empirical question. And the only way to answer that is not to argue theology, it's to actually look at the evidence. And Gerson, I mean, there's no chance, based on what he's written, I think, that he would have the patience or the tolerance, frankly, to be able to sit and actually watch a debate on this subject.
Right. And when he mentions natural selection, of course, he's leaving out, well, what raw material does natural selection select from? And then you have the old question of randomness, which you had an interesting dialogue with Alvin Plantinga. And of course, you share a lot more ground with him than you do with Gerson, but you still had some interesting differences that you sort of parsed out.
So yeah, definitely. It was based on Plantinga's really actually very good book on science and religion. And my only disagreement with Plantinga is that I think he's wanting to use an idiosyncratic definition of the word random. Strictly speaking, you might say, okay, by random process, we only mean that we can't predict it ahead of time or it's not determined by a law of physics or something like that. But again, theorists have the right to use their theories and to understand them the way they understand them. And if you actually look at how Darwinists understand the theory, is a combination of natural selection, which is not guided, and random variations, by which they mean not guided. So when Christians say, well, maybe it looks random to us, but it's really guided by God. Okay, yeah, and that's a logical possibility. It also has nothing to do with Darwinian theory, and now you're talking about a different thing. You're saying God actually designs, plays an active role in natural history, and decisive role in natural history. He's just doing it so that it's hard to detect in individual cases or something like that. Again, that's a coherent argument. I would want to say, Okay, but why think that that's what he does? What evidence do we have beyond a couple of coordinated mutations and interesting cases that natural selection has that kind of power? And if you're willing to say God could act in natural history, then let's, again, look at the evidence without the blinders on. We don't do that in large part because certainly among Christians, we treat that as, oh, well, I'm going to get dismissed at that point as being a crank. But I assume that we should ultimately be more interested in what the truth is and not with the kind of social pressures that we might be under.
Right. Now, Jay, as you've looked at Michael Gerson's argument, what other things interested you or that you'd like to comment about if you want to go back to politics or how Trump and evolution, what would you like to say?
Absolutely. I mean, I really think that Gerson, and I encourage listeners to read the piece because it is a paradigmatic example of something that happens to conservatives in Washington, D.C. And you see this all the time. The city and the place, even with a Republican president and Republicans in charge of the House and the Senate, is overwhelmingly secular and left-wing. There are lots of Christians here.
Right.
But in terms of the kind of spirit of the place, it's overwhelmingly secular and left-wing. And so conservatives are constantly under pressure to figure out, okay, how do I fit in? And the easiest way to fit in is not to cease to be a conservative or cease to be a Christian. It's to come up with strategic compromises and surrenders so that they, okay, maybe they could, I want to be the person at the cocktail party that people say, oh, he's a respectable evangelical or he's a respectable conservative. And so the big issues, the temptations that I found to do this, one is, of course, the debate over Darwinism. That's the easiest one in some ways because DC is mostly about politics, not natural science. Most writers and staffers on the Hill, don't know anything about the science anyway. Right. So they say, let's surrender that. The other one is climate change and global warming. Again, science, highly costly to be a heretic on that. So surrender on that or on the animal rights question. And unfortunately, there are a lot of conservatives inside the Beltway that have just picked one of these issues and said, okay, this is going to be the one on which I'm just going to concede all the territory to the opposition. So at least I'll get invited to some of the toniest cocktail parties.
It's like their entrance ticket to polite conversation, right?
No, exactly. And I've been, you know, honestly, when I first moved here 5 years ago, I got invited to things like this. I get invited to fewer of these things, honestly, these days. But, you know, unfortunately, I was blessed not to have the gene that causes me to feel like everybody needs to like me. So it doesn't bother me.
Right. Okay. Well, so now for further study on this topic, of course, we have the book that you edited back in 2010 with Discovery Institute Press called God and Evolution. And then this newer book with Crossway called Theistic Evolution, A Scientific, Philosophical, and Theological Critique. Tell us just a little bit, comparing your book back in 2010 and this newer book, what would you recommend to our listeners in regard to the topic we've discussed today?
Well, both of them, ideally. The God and Evolution was much more narrowly focused on really the kind of theological questions for Catholics, evangelicals, and Jews. The big Theistic Evolution volume is just much more larger, much more extensive, much more detailed in terms of the scientific heft. But if you just, a person just looks at the Theistic Evolution book, you realize, okay, well, if this is all just kind of settled science, then I assume these must all be blank pages. But they're not. They're detailed, literate questions that are involved both, not just on the science, but the integration of theology and natural science. And these kind of flippant claims that, God's acting directly and natural selection are more or less the same thing. I mean, it just doesn't make any sense. And I just don't think it still, unfortunately, it shows that those of us in the intelligent design movement still have a lot of work to do because, you know, somebody of Gerson's stature that identifies as an evangelical should at least feel discomfort in saying things like this, which are just patently untrue.
Well, great. Thanks so much, Jay, for being on the show today. Again, this is Mike Keyes with ID the Future, and we've been talking about politics and evolution, and it's been fun. Thanks, Jay.
My pleasure. Thanks, Mike.
All right, take care. Goodbye.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute. For more information, visit intelligentdesign.org and idthefuture.com.